You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
ClevelandBrowns.com is your most trusted source for Browns news, plus the latest photos and videos straight from the source. Visit ClevelandBrowns.com for everything Browns. That's ClevelandBrowns.com. Nathan Zagura, Vic Carucci with you, and it's time for the CBD Mailbag. So bring in our producer, Casey Koulis, who was with us today to read your first batch of mail.
All right, guys, make sure you guys use the hashtag mailbag. The first one's from DMost8. Guys, how are my guys Connor Shaw and Pierre D looking at OTAs?
Connor Shaw, I think, he's getting limited reps given where he is on the depth chart right now. He's running fourth behind Thigpen. I certainly think he has an opportunity to get ahead of him as this offseason progresses. Not the strongest arm, but a tough, gritty guy, good mobility, good anticipatory thrower, good accuracy. He's actually looked pretty good, and I thought he's been getting better, too, as the practices have gone on. And Pierre Desir working in, starting to get more reps, starting to be more comfortable. Just athletically speaking, the guy is fun to watch. Tall, long, good strides. He's looking pretty good. I think Pierre Desir is going to be an impact player down the line for the Browns.
Yeah, Shaw, it's not too big for him, and I think that shouldn't be a surprise, of course. A guy coming into this situation and not feeling like anything is the competition where he came from the collegiate level to the National Football League doesn't overwhelm him in any possible way. And it should, you would think, well, it shouldn't. SEC, you played in a lot of big games, big stadiums. But I just like his grasp of things. As you point out, athletically, physically, not the best in any way or something that stands out to you. You can see why he was available to be signed as an undrafted free agent. But the thing I continue to like about the guy is that mental presence, how quickly he's picking things up. And he could be really as good an influence as any on a Johnny Manziel. Even though they're peers as rookies, there's just a little more, I think, in Shaw, a little more of an elevated sense of grasping things and having the mental part down, and then just echoing that and being a sounding board or whatever in the meeting room, I think is good for Manziel. And as far as Desir goes, yeah, it's easy to – I think a lot of people are going to fall in love with this guy as an athlete as they watch him in training camp and up close. And you're right, Nathan, he's going to have a key role in a defense that places so much emphasis on really good coverage. I think he's going to get awesome and many opportunities.
Yeah, me too.
Next up from That a Boy Nikki. Guys, I'd really like to know how anyone could even contemplate that Hoyer is the answer after only 9 quarters and backing up Tom Brady.
And that's the thing. There's such an interesting dynamic here. You have the guy, people who are all Johnny Football that are just 100% in his camp. You should start right away that love Johnny Football. Then you have another camp that is so staunchly in support of Brian Hoyer that he is the answer. How dare you guys want Johnny Football? I don't know if it's I don't think it's a generational thing. I just think there's a certain segment of the population that believes it. Again, I go back to what I've said all along. And fortunately, I've been consistent. You could go back to basically any show when we've been throughout this whole process with Brian Hoyer and hear my thoughts, and they still are true. I think this team can get to the playoffs with Brian Hoyer as its quarterback. But because of his limited body of work and the limited time that we've seen him, and you even heard a guy like John Clayton say, yeah, I think he can win you 3 games, but he can lose you 3 games. He's about a .500 quarterback or a little bit better than that when he plays well. He's not a game-changing quarterback. Brian Hoyer has earned the right to compete and enter this competition as the starter to the point where he would need to be beaten soundly by Johnny Manziel to lose that job along the way this season. And that's where I stand. That's where I've always stood. I don't get the people that are convinced based on what they saw in a limited subset when the NFL didn't really have time to study a lot of tape on him and start to play to his tendencies. I don't understand why people are ready to anoint him the next Joe Montana. I think he's good. I hope he's good. But right now he's earned the right to go into camp as the starter and compete for that job, and that's what's happening.
I think the obvious reasons are the impressive stuff he did in a very tight snapshot, hometown guy, underdog story to root for. All of those things play well, particularly I think in this market. I think with Browns fans, you back that guy. It's probably true with every sporting market in the country, but you back a guy like that and very likable, very all the presence that he has. And again, reality check, and I'm a big fan of Brian Hoyer's, but I think the biggest thing Brian Hoyer also had going for him last year was that his name wasn't Brandon Whedon, and I think that also swayed maybe skewed the favorable impression of him, because the other quarterbacks on the team, Jason Campbell, for his part, just didn't do anything to make you think that. I mean, he was the hope, and now it's changed. It's very different. Now there is competition, and coming in the form of a Johnny Manziel that's very different than anything he's dealt with before. So I think it's, you keep it at that level. You compete, and whoever shows that he's ready to play is the guy that you put out there. Now, we mentioned Johnny Manziel. He spoke with reporters today. Casey, I think you've got the sound from post-practice.
We'll
now
have it here right at 2 o'clock. We'll take a short break after the mailbag, and we'll have it all for everyone then.
All right.
So we'll do a couple more mailbag questions, like, and then we'll have Johnny Manziel's press conference from after practice today. Let's go back to that mailbag. What do you got for us, Case?
From MattPaul11 at Browns_daily using the hashtag mailbag. The Browns want to run the ball this year, but the O-line is built more as a finesse pass line. How will they do it?
That's one of the reasons they went out and got Joel Bitonio, mean, nasty guard, to help implement that and and change kind of the feeling for the line. Now, they also think, when you think about a offensive line in a zone scheme, it's not necessarily about having five big mahonking maulers to run the football. There's a lot of movement involved. So a finesse style line actually fits into that, along with some physicality. You need to be able to move. You also have to be physical. That's what they're going to try to do with this line. And they've got some guys. I know that they think Alex Mack is the absolute perfect center to play in this offense due to his ability to move from the center position.
Couple of points of reality with offensive lines. Every line needs, no matter what your style of play is, San Francisco, which is the big overpowering type of line, Seattle, or what the Browns do, which is much more, as the mailbag writer said there, this quote finesse or pass-oriented line. But they have to start with the top-level first-round left tackle. And Joe Thomas obviously is here. That's huge. That's a huge component to have. But after that, lines come in different shapes and sizes. And this particular line, the thrust isn't so much about, it's really not right to call it finesse. It's versatile. It's versatility versus what you have where with San Francisco, it's more one-dimensional. All you're drafting, and it's more expensive work, by the way, to load your roster with these bigger, powerful guys. Why? Because there are fewer of them available than the smaller guys. I mean, that's just how it is. Finding that rare big athlete who can be dominant physically, be strong, be talented, is much more a premium than trying to fill the types of players that you have on this line. So that's a good thing for the Browns. Yes, you point out Joe Bitonio comes into this with a tougher attitude, but overall, you can still run the ball effectively behind the non-plow blade, big, powerful line when you have the system like the Browns have, the outside zone scheme, but you have to have the backs that fit it with the right patient, with that ability to plant, pivot, and turn and make the one cut and see things quickly and have the right instincts to do it. That's the key from your drafting, from your personnel standpoint, to find those kinds of players. And again, Ben Tate, we think he's been a backup. We think has a lot of that skill. I think that's a good pickup. We're liking what we see from Terrence West. Hasn't played an NFL down, but the promise potential looks like it could be there. Just to name a couple of guys who fit in well. You mentioned Alex Mack as well as being another key to this flow, but it's a flow type of line versus a power line. You can still run the ball effectively, and you will run the ball more often with this line. There will be many more run plays than you saw in 2013.
There's no doubt about it. When we come back, Johnny Manziel's post-practice press conference, we will air that for you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.